And I'll be joining.
And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are always glad that you could be with us. And I'd also like to welcome our guest presenters today, who you'll meet momentarily. As a reminder, your feedback is always welcomed, which could be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled for about 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. I'm going to begin roll call of our work group members. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are with us. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Marianne Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich.
Hi, everyone.
Hans Wittendeck.
Morning.
Thomas Cantalina or Jeff Ford. Christina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Stephen Eichner.
Good morning.
Angie Tandon.
Good morning.
Raj Gavarti.
Good morning.
Jim Gerges. Ken Kawamoto. Leslie Leonard. Hung Liu.
Good morning.
David McCauley.
Good morning.
Tom McDonald. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber is not able to join us today. Abby Sears. And Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you. And now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arian for their opening remarks.
Thank you so much, Mike. Really appreciate everybody's time and attention this morning. I'm sorry, I'll be on video momentarily here. But I really did want to take this opportunity to set us up a little bit for this discussion. Let me just transition my...
You just went on mute, Stephen.
There we go.
There. Are you back, Stephen?
I believe so.
You've got an echo.
No, I've got it. I've got it fixed.
Okay.
What I was going to say was that this is a challenge that we have been struggling with in health IT for years. And I can tell you as a clinician, as an informaticist, and as a member of the national health IT community, this is a challenge that I deal with every single day as I take care of patients, as we manage our health IT systems at my organization, and as we all work together in work groups like this and in task forces throughout the industry. The need to be able to exchange discrete laboratory data in such a way that it can go easily into workflow and really be put to work by the relevant individual or stakeholder or process has been a challenge from the beginning. You know, as I think back over 20 years ago to when we were setting up our first electronic medical record, the first true interoperability that we attended to was our interfaces with our lab systems, our external lab systems, where we send the labs out and we got the results back. And we know that we can do that. We know that we can order and receive test results in a way that goes right into workflow. And then when we started interoperating between organizations, this appeared immediately as a critical need. And we've made some progress. You know, in certain situations, you know, in COVID, certainly in the context of the pandemic, we were able to do a lot of early work to be able to get test results and subsequently antibody results to move back and forth between systems. But it was a very limited use case. And of course, laboratory data is so extensive, and there are so many use cases where it is critical to be able to understand what's going on, whether it's at the level of the individual, the provider, or the organization or the country or the world. We know that the standards exist. You know, you can write an HL7 V2 interface and bring across all of the data that you need in order to integrate. And we know also that FHIR is working, that patients, individuals have the ability to point, you know, their app to the national labs and bring down the data that they need. But I can't, as a clinician, point to the patient's FHIR app. I can't point to the lab to just randomly, you know, say, send me all the results you have, or send me a subset of the results that you have on this patient. And a lot of very smart people have struggled with this mightily over the past few years. And a number of them are on the phone with us today. We've invited a number of people to join us, people who are trying to do this. But what we found is today, you know, if you are an organization that is focusing on how to interoperate discrete test results with other organizations, that you end up dedicating human resources to setting up and maintaining mapping at a level that is simply not scalable. So we don't have the solution in place to solve this. And we've talked about this, you know, within prior iterations of the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. We've talked about it within the Care Quality Commonwealth Joint Document Content Work Group. Within today, this is being discussed within Sequoia. A lot of groups have worked on this, and a number of the people who've worked on it are here today to talk to us. And what we're going to see is a lot of very complex flow diagrams of how this data is moving today. But what we need really is a national solution that is scalable, that doesn't resign us to having, you know, tens, hundreds of mappers sitting in every single organization to maintain this flow of data. So I just really, I want to thank the people who've joined us today to present, and a number of folks who've joined us today to listen to this presentation, because this is really important work and we've got to figure it out. Thanks for indulging that, Arian.
No problem. I very impassioned. And I'd only add to that, you know, the last time that we brought this band together for the Interoperability Standards, the incarnation of the Interoperability Standards Task Force in 2018 or 2019, we concluded at the time that there were zero interoperability barriers to complete transmission of orders and results. We had implementation guidance and the LOI and the LRI guides. We had good work from LOINC on mapping to standard compendia. There was good work on ask it order entry questions. There were zero structural, you know, you just can't do this barriers to interoperability of lab data. And yet when COVID hit us, we had massive problems getting the demographic information that was associated with a lab result over to public health, because in most cases, the lab order, when it went electronically, was only set up to transmit insurance information. So making progress on bilateral workflow, order to result and back to the ordering provider, as well as onto public health, is pretty clearly a national priority. We've got all the technical means to do that, and we should. But back in that report, if you go back and look at it, we suggested to ONC that ONC convene FDA and CMS and other regulatory agencies to look at the mapping between what we call analyte machines of the day and LOINC, to be able to preserve the semantic content of a lab all the way from analyte machine, from IVD, all the way to clinical result. And lo and behold, many other people had this fantastic idea. We're here to hear from a number of them. And, you know, I take this as a sign of, you know, just giddy optimism that we know what we need to do. And all we need to do is accelerate the work that's on the ground and put the appropriate policy levers in place. So with all of that, we have a fantastic presentation where we're going to hear about SHIELD. We're going to hear about LIVID. And then I believe we're going to hear, maybe the ONC team can correct us, we're going to hear from ONC about some of the coordination that they've done. I'm not sure that's reflected here on the agenda slide. Can Mike, can you confirm whether we have a member from ONC to do a presentation? If not, we will roll straight into Ricky from APHL to give us a view of SHIELD.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Can you guys hear me?
We gotcha.
Okay. All right, so thank you for letting me introduce you to SHIELD's strategic plan for improving laboratory data interoperability. And Stephen and Arian already took a little bit of my thunder, but we'll get you through this anyway. Next slide is the obligatory disclosure. So this strategic plan is going through consensus in the SHIELD group, but the SHIELD is a consortium of stakeholders, so there is no official sign off, and so it doesn't represent anybody's specific policy or position. So that's my disclaimer. And next slide gives you a little bit of the outline of what I was going to talk to you about. I'm going to introduce you to the strategic plan, give a little bit of background about SHIELD, because SHIELD's been around for probably 6-7 years now. So we've been working on this a long time. It's a slow moving thing, everybody pointed out. And we'll talk about the business cases and the current state, and then we'll focus mainly on the first stage of the strategic plan and go from there. So next slide gives you the introduction to SHIELD. It's a public-private collaborative with a mission to describe the same test the same way anywhere in the healthcare ecosystem. So that's a big mission. As Stephen pointed out, we're having troubles with that. And so this consortium has been put together as stakeholders in the blue box on the right. So we think we got pretty much everybody covered. And we've been pretty successful in building consensus about what the nature of the problem is, identifying specific issues that we can improve. And the pandemic, of course, highlighted the issues that we're having even more and pushed SHIELD to actually work on a strategic plan. So we formed a couple of committees and try to come up with a solution. But SHIELD worked with the IVD manufacturers to provide the most granular coding at the source of the data. So thinking the manufacturers know their tests best, so they should be able to properly codify them. And so the IVD Industry Connectivity Consortium, or IICC, developed the version 251-based instrument interface standard at IET, called the Laboratory Analytical Workflow. And that's been tested in Connectathons and is part of the technical framework at IHE. And then they set out to work on the LOINC to IVD mapping standard, which Hans will talk about. But throughout this whole work, we really realized that there is not a single terminology that is able to encode all the information that we need around laboratory data. So one size won't fit all. We'll need a group approach. Next slide. So the strategic plan, we've broken it up into two stages. Stage one is the pilot. It's the first thing we need to do. We need to harmonize the coding of lab data and create an authoritative source that can be used nationally by all lab data users. We need to build the infrastructure to move the data between stakeholders without any loss of fidelity and meaning, and provide tooling to make that process as easy and automated as possible. And part of the infrastructure that SHIELD is thinking about building is an IVD data hub to provide real-world evidence to IVD manufacturers and other stakeholders. And that is built as an incentive for IVD manufacturers to participate. And then hopefully with having built all this infrastructure, we're ready for stage two to roll it out to the over 300,000 labs and their partners across the US. And this will need a series of sticks and carrots to move this forward. And we certainly wanna use the lessons learned from the pilot and improve upon. So this won't be easy by any means. And it'll take many years. And both of those will need very close collaboration between public and private sector. Next slide. So I'm going to set the stage a little bit here to understand how lab data moves around the system. There are many places where we use paper, so that's another thing we need to address. But in this diagram, you'll see those red bursts. And those are places in the current state where data is manipulated, where that mapping is happening that Steve is talking about. which takes resources and provides opportunity for an introduction of error. So the healthcare provider on the left, provider number one orders their tests from their in-house lab, and number two orders uses a reference laboratory as an example. The lab performs the test, and if the instruments aren't interfaced, then that's a manual step too, to make that data electronic into their LIS. So that's why there's a burst on the lab side. Next. The lab provides the results back to the provider, and even with an in-house lab, depending on the size of the healthcare system, the data may need adjustments. But when you need to integrate data from the outside lab, you need to have even more information. Next. The provider number one is now asking for another test from a reference lab as a follow-up. And next, when the result gets back, they need to understand if the result is considered equivalent to the in-house result and can be used in the patient flow sheet or for decision support. For example, during the early days of COVID, when a patient had an existing COVID test, it could be used to triage for provider PPE use and patient handling if the test considered equivalent. But if you didn't have enough information, preferably to the level of the test kit and the instrument used and the specimen type specifically, then you would have to just assume it's not equivalent and you'd have to redo the test. Next. We currently have quite a bit of standards defined to support reporting to public health, but not all the labs encode the test the same way. So the public health agency also has to curate data. Next. Lab results may also be used for research and clinical trials, but the requirements there differ from study to study, making the lab data not comparable across studies or sometimes not even within the same study. And next, we're all familiar with exchanging data between providers, either directly or via HIEs, but that's also not super standardized. So you see a lot of red bursts, and we have a lot of problems. Which, next slide, brings us to the business cases. So for laboratories and healthcare providers, obviously there are a lot of resources that are used to codify and curate the data, which require specific skill sets that are not easily found. And even then, you have highly skilled people, there is still a high level of variability in the mapping outcome. And of course, maintenance is never ending. On the IVD manufacturer side, they have to support a multitude of different interfaces with each LIS, which takes a lot of resources on their end for maintenance that otherwise could be used for research and development. In addition, they must provide costly studies for post-market data to the FDA so that their tests can remain on the market. So both those things we hope to make easier with SHIELD strategic plan. Information system vendors have created their own data models and local coding to support their clients because that's more flexible and faster for each individual implementation. But it certainly creates some data silos and hindering data exchange between different vendor systems. So supporting proper exchange, again, requires a lot of resources, which drives up user costs. And last but not least, and most importantly, that clinicians are dealing with a lack of interoperability and loss of meaning when they're merging lab data from different sources, either risking patient well-being or redoing tests to avoid that. Next slide. So here is where the strategic plan comes in. Whoops, I'm back, please, sorry. Yeah, here's where the strategic plan comes in. So the majority of the presentation, I'm gonna talk about the stage one of the strategic plan, which is establishing the authoritative source for the codification of data, which we call the laboratory interoperability data repository or leader, and the related infrastructure. And then ensuring the flow of the knowledge throughout the healthcare system and providing tooling to share that knowledge and create the IVD data hub to make that knowledge accessible on the individual level. over all of those strategies, we need to make sure we have a feedback loop where we have processes to identify errors that can improve the data quality, that feedback into the pilot and so on. So it's a circle. So next slide shows where we are today after, or what we envision it to be after Shield. So next, providers will still order tests, and a new test comes on the market. The IVD manufacturers provide a lot of data to the FDA, and a UDI can be assigned to the test. And that data can be submitted by the manufacturer to LEADER. Next. And it can be then curated potentially, and the mapping can be verified, but it will include all the metadata that is needed to properly identify the test and the related elements around it using standard terminologies like SNOMED. Next. Shield will provide the tooling for labs to use LEADER to properly set up the new test in their LIS system. And they can also use the IHELAW standards for instrument interfacing in their lab, which will report the results back to the LMS within the lab. Next, if we're using SHIELD standards, for example, LOI and LRI for the ordering and the result reporting back, those standards already support all the required elements by CLIA, as well as additional demographic elements, because both of those have a public health profile component, so that those data elements that are important for public health can be exchanged if we need to get them through the lab. There's a whole nother discussion that we should have about getting demographic data and some other data that the lab doesn't need for interpretation of their lab results directly from providers to public health through case reporting rather than shoving them through the lab flow. But that's the story for, or a discussion for another day. Next, LRI will send the data back retaining the properly coded test results, including identifying the test kit used so that the healthcare provider can determine equivalence of the results. Next. Shield will build that IVD data hub for real-world evidence for post-market studies. And next, the labs could still report directly for public health and research, but hopefully with a higher level of standardization. But next, they could also, they could also use the hub to get their data from that. So well-curated data, next, in both providers' EHRs can then be exchanged with a lower loss of data fidelity. Next. One more. So for all of this, we'll use the feedback loop, and we've come up with some key performance indicators to improve any data quality. So next, I'll walk you through some action steps. We have to identify all the data elements that are needed to ensure that a test result is sufficiently described to enable clinical interoperability. We need to define whether those elements need to be traveling with each patient result, so having to go via LOI and LRI, versus whether they can be looked up in LEADER, for example, at a later point in time. So once we've completed that analysis for the different use cases, we need to work with information system vendors like LIS and EHR and middleware vendors to make sure they all support those required elements. Next. We suspect that in the process, we'll identify elements that are not currently covered by the standard specifications we have proposed for use. And so then we'll work with the standard development organizations to identify any gaps and remedy those. Next, we need to build the first prototype of LEADER in the IVD data hub, as well as associated tooling to support upload, review, and publication of its contents. For that, we need to complete requirements gathering, define proper governance processes and decision-making practices, and create those feedback mechanisms during review and after publication. And leader will need ongoing support, for sure. Next. For the pilot, we'll decide what we want in the minimal viable product for the for leader and the IBD data hub. And for that, we want to identify either high impact tests that have IBD vendors that want to participate in this process. And then we need to obviously populate leader with the upload and start sending data through the system. Next. So important thing that we haven't done yet is we need to build governance for longevity, specifically for leader, because that's kind of the Rosetta Stone of the common model of meaning around lab data. And so it needs to be curated and supported indefinitely because lab methods evolve and new use cases of lab data show up every day. So we need to make sure that we have input from all the data creators as well as all the data users so that we don't leave anybody out. So next for SHIELD is to socialize the strategic plan, which we're doing, and reorganizing SHIELD a little bit to work more on the implementation side of the strategic plan and continue ensuring participation for all stakeholders. And some of those things in the SHIELD strategic plan, like the IBD Data Hub and LEADER, will need funding sources, so we'll need to figure out how to get that going. And that's my end. The next couple slides just have some acronyms explained.
Yeah. Hey, so we're gonna do joint questions at the end. But can you define LEADER, LIDR?
Yeah, that's the Laboratory Interoperability Data Repository. So that's where we're envisioning to have the information that Hans is talking about in LIVIT and any other metadata about the test be available for query.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So Ricky, that was fantastic. Truly amazing. So we do actually have folks from the ONC. Andrew Northrup is going to talk about the ISA currently, and Greg Pappas is originally from FDA on loan to ONC and really serving as the ONC leader for SHIELD. So I don't know, Greg, if you want to talk, give a brief intro before we go to Andrew's section on the existing standards in the ISA.
Thanks a lot. I'll just say, Ricky did a fantastic job. I just want to make a little bit of a nuanced point that Ricky said SHIELD will do this and that. Actually, it's the SHIELD plan calling for this and that. The SHIELD is a an outstanding group of volunteers and champions from many organizations, including the government, that has put together this plan. As Ricky said, we came together, identified the right partners to do this work, came to consensus on the nature of the problem, and then did the strategic planning process. It's not binding on the government. We're not proposing that. We are proposing as a group of experts that we think this is a way forward. Pending any other brilliant ideas that come from other people, this seems to be the way forward, and we're hoping that government agencies and private sector agencies will come together and fund this activity and do this activity. A SHIELD is not the implementing body per se. So I just want to make that little bit of a correction for some of the statements that Ricky made. She was doing it for ease of presentation, but I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, profound thanks to Ricky. All right, Andrew, why don't you lead us through what we currently have in the ISA? And you are mute. Double mute.
All right, what about now?
There we go. Perfect.
All right. Thanks. All right. My name is Andrew Northup. I'm the laboratory data class lead. I sit in the terminology, content, and care delivery branch of the standards division in ONC's Office of Technology. Like Arian said, I'll be walking us through the ISO pages pertaining to laboratory interoperability today. So as you see here, we are at the ISA landing page, the ISA main page, where the relevant pages we're looking at are located are in the ISA content page in the banner up here. So I'm going to click on that. Now this brings us to the main ISA table of contents. There's going to be two tabs in here where the laboratory pages are going to be located. The first one we're going to go into is the content and structure tab. So I'm going to click on that and then scroll down here to laboratory. I'm going to click the little plus sign to expand this menu here. And in here is where we start to see the kind of the substantive areas. So the first one I'm going to click on is exchanging in vitro diagnostics, IVD test orders and results. I'm going to expand that into a new page. Actually, I don't know if I can do that. And you see here, these are the standards that are associated with exchanging IVD test orders and results. So HL7 FHIR implementation guide for low-link IVD mapping. This is LIVID. Some are familiar with that. Also have CLSI Auto 16, next generation in vitro diagnostic interface for submission. The next one is LAW, the IHE LAW, laboratory analytical workflow profile. And the final one, LIVID, digital format for publication of link to vendor IVD test results. I'm going to go back now, go back to my content and structure, go back to my laboratory. Next up is ordering laboratory test results for a patient. Now here, there is one specification listed. This is HL7 version 2.5.1 implementation guide, laboratory orders from EHR, also known as LOI, release one. And then moving back to where we were, going to the next area under laboratory, receive electronic laboratory test results. And here we have one implementation specification and then an emerging specification as well. So the first one is HL7 version 2.5.1, implementation guide, SNI framework, lab results interface, at least one. And the other one is the emerging specification is implementation guide for lab results interface, LRI. So we may know that is LRI. And moving back, the last item under the main laboratory area is for supporting the transmission of a laboratory's directory of services to provider's health IT or EHR system. And now here, there in this list, we have one implementation specification that's EDOF, the SNI framework, laboratory test compendium framework, at least two. This is, as I said, EDOS, commonly known as EDOS, electronic directory of service. And then two emerging specifications, one related to EDOS and one related to another laboratory services directory, HL7 FHIR order catalog implementation guide, laboratory services 0.1.1. And I'm gonna move back to the main content structure. There's also a laboratory related item under this area, public health reporting, if you can see my cursor. So I'm going to expand that, scroll all the way down. And the laboratory related area here is this one, electronic transmission of reportable laboratory results to public health agencies. So I'm going to give that a click. And here we see a few different specifications. One is HL7 version 2.5.1 implementation guide, electronic laboratory reporting to public health. Some know this, might know this as ELR. And then down here, I guess it's, these are all three related to electronic reporting to public health. Just going back here. So we've now covered the lab pages related to content and structure. We're now going to move into the ISA pages related to lab vocabulary and terminology. So I'm going to click on this. very similar, but not the same structure as in content. I'm sorry, layout as content as the content and structure page, but a lot of similarities here. So scrolling down to laboratory, expanding, and then the first item here is representing laboratory test ordered. When I click on that, these are the terminology standards relating to representation of laboratory tests ordered. So there's a standard for observations, LOINC, and also standard listed here, CPT, current procedural terminology. Going back to this main listing, we've covered tests ordered. Now we're going to go into representing tests performed. And here there is one standard listed, LOINC. Going back into this page, we have the final area representing laboratory test values. So we've had test ordered, test performed, and now these are the values and results. And so for representing laboratory values and results, we have both LOINC and SNOMED CT. And then just moving back, the one final area in ISA related to laboratory data interoperability is here, similar to the previous tab, public health emergency preparedness and response. And we're gonna expand that list, go down into representing laboratory operations, population laboratory surveillance, give that a click. And then once again, the terminology code associated with this is, for representing laboratory operations is LOINC. And that concludes the walkthrough of the lab-related ISA pages. I think, are we doing questions at the very end?
Yeah, we'll do questions at the end. I'm just gonna do a little editorial over here because we had some questions about the standards process. And just to memorialize what's in the chat, in HL7, standards go through, you know, a pre-standard process to a draft standard for trial use process to a standard for trial use process through a final published standard, normative standard. Ideally, the way that works is in line with production use. We saw this very successfully with FHIR, where FHIR went through DSTU 2 and then STU 3 and then final standard. And while it was in both the DSTU and STU phases, it got heavily used in practice, and a lot of the issues were worked out prior to the final standard. And it's really the final standard where you want to make sure that you have forward-looking compatibility. So you don't break compatibility for future publication. And then maybe the other explanatory thing is, well, you know, I know that laboratory data routinely gets exchanged in the real world. So how is the LRI guide, and the LOI guide in draft standard or balloted draft? And just a little bit of walking down memory lane for the work group. We created the LRI and LOI spec as an ONC public private collaborative with a wide stakeholder group back in, I believe, 2011. It went through its process to become a balloted standard. The expectation was, you know, it was going to be named into certification. The LRI spec was named into certification, but the way that the certification rules worked, we didn't want to rip and replace existing working lab standards. And then subsequently, we topped out the electronic lab incorporation CMS measure. And we believed at the time that we should tie certification methods only to CMS measures. And so because we topped out the lab certification meaningful use measure, we then removed the certification for LRI from the ONC certification program. And so it's a weird unintended consequence that because lab results were routinely performed and routinely electronically delivered, we haven't gotten to the point where we actually have standardization of lab results. We haven't gotten to the next step of electronic orders. And because we haven't done that work, when we were impacted by COVID, we did not have the infrastructure set up that both LOI and LRI would have provided us to flow directly into ELR, the electronic lab reporting, and then be the infrastructure back for Shield and Livent. And then I would encourage everybody to go back and read the report that we created under Steven's leadership in 2018 and 2019, because I think when you look at the lab and order section, you'll see just a lot already there, a lot of good requirements and recommendations already there. But with that, let's turn it over to Hans to talk about Livent.
Okay, and I believe that I need to share my screen, correct? Or do you have the slides there?
You're good.
I'm good. Okay, great. Pulled a couple of the things, condensed them together on all these acronyms that are out there, that we have an EHR and LIS. The ELR can run from the LIS to the PH Public Health, clearly. And from the EHR, it may as well. So that's it needs to be able to do that, but it is not always required based on state or other jurisdictions. And then law is the one that Ricky references is mainly focusing to the IVD devices to interact there. So IVD lit, LIS test result mapping is all about trying to make sure that from right to left, as quickly as possible, the encoding and the availability of coding is based on LOINC and SNOMED rather than either IVD test codes or LIS test and codes, that it's all standardized in that fashion. That's the objective there. So if you go to the next slide, is that you have on the IVD device side up at the top, the IVD test and the IVD result value. And we're only looking at those that are encoded in some fashion. So where there is a standard vocabulary to be used, an IVD test can have multiple outcomes and they are there. But when you start to go from that IVD test, IVD result value into the LIS test result and the LIS result value, you'll see that the same test, depending on context, can map to different LIS test results and associated result values. Probably less so on the latter, but certainly on the first one based on context. So what's used today is that individual labs can figure that. They go through that. And as that now, as they are now trying to say, the LIS test result is needs to be mapped to LOINC and SNOMED to then be able to pass on to the EHR and to public health and everybody else, we need to map that. So the LIS test result, we need to get that into LOINC. That's the arrow from left to right from LIS test result. And we need to get the test, the result value to either LOINC or SNOMED, whatever is appropriate. So those are the mappings that need to occur. And today, LOINC, SNOMED, guidance generally is being used, so which informs a human being to do the mapping based on their expertise that they need to understand how is this IVD test used in the lab, and therefore what's the right and for what in what context, so what's the right LIS test result, and what's then the right LOINC code or SNOMED code. If you go to the next slide where LIVD comes into play, and I'll go back to the, it stands for LOINC IVDT IVD test mapping. That is trying to say is that, okay, if we let everything happen the way it currently is happening today, everybody in their individual implementations or chunks of that is going to try to interpret that the best they can and come up with a mapping. If we can get already from the device manufacturer into the LIS a good understanding what the likely encoding is, not the one-on-one, so you see a zero dot dot star indicating is that it is possible that the same test is used for different purposes, therefore different LOINC codes. So the LIVD is trying to create a mapping catalog that identifies the most likely and most likely appropriate mapping that's in play. It is not doing a one-on-one mapping, because clearly an IVD test can be used in different contexts, and therefore it's the same test fundamentally, but it's going to yield a different loin code in order to ensure that it's properly interpreted in the context that it's being used. So part of the mapping definition is then not just a, I have an IVD test code and I have a loin code and these are the likely ones. No, there's information around the result context, the specimen context, perhaps some other context that's described to help get to a better mapping. If you go to the next slide, where we are then looking and say, well, that's what we're trying to do. The IICC developed initially a first way of documenting those mappings using a spreadsheet format. So when you go to the that Arthur shared earlier as well, and you go to the IICC spreadsheet-based IG, it will go to the latest version, second edition that that's available. You also see a couple of other references, like the HL7 draft for LIVD. On the published side, either through the ISA that makes a reference to the IICC or the HL7 fire draft, they are mapping test codes. So if you, for a moment, go back to the prior slide, is that it is dealing with the LIS test results or the IVD test effectively, fundamentally, to the LOINC mapping. That's what's currently defined in the spreadsheets, and where and Ricky could talk further about that. Where for SARS-CoV that specifically the set that, of relevant tests have been documented in that way as well. If you can go back to the next slide, yep. Then in progress, what we have is that we also need to map the result codes. So work is in progress. To finish that work and to incorporate that in the Firebase, and then it also still would have to be incorporated in the spreadsheet format that's out there. So that's work in progress. That's not done yet. We are actually at the tail end of it to making sure that both the result code mapping as well as the needs that have come up from the COVID environment on the test kits, which in part is already included in the spreadsheet format, that that's included as well, and then we can go out. So what we have is that a LIVET STU-1 was balloted twice, but not yet published because we were catching up with that work to get that done. That's in flight. We hope to have that done very soon, no specific date yet. So then a fire-based expression is available that the intent right now is that it's mostly provided in electronic format as part of documentation and otherwise. And at some point in time, there is the opportunity to make that data available through fire-based APIs as well by different parties that have an interest in that. So that's where we currently sit with the LIVD specific status. And again, once we have that, then it's documented or already being used in different places using the spreadsheet, is that it is guidance. It is not authoritative as in that's the only mapping you can do, because everything still has a dependency on the local lab situation as to how are they using the test for what purpose from the device that then associates with the appropriate LIS and LOINC and SNOMED encoding. So that's the current state, and then happy to take any questions in between Ricky and myself.
Again. Yeah. Hey, both to Ricky and Hans and Greg and Andrew and team, I think it might be worthwhile, just because we've gone so deep into the work to create the future state, that we just do a little bit of time to describe the current state. So I'm going to give you a current state from my perspective and invite you to correct me in areas that I got it wrong. So to get a, you know, the end of this, at the end of this, we want an interoperable lab in the EHR and in the patient's hands. And interoperable means that the information is available in a structure with terminology that is clinically interpretable and where we can provide decision support tools for the patient to enable, you know, appropriate clinical and patient self-management. To get that, we need the elements of the lab, which we just went over in our USCDI deliberation. And we need them to be coded with the LOINC code as the test, and then the numeric result with a UCM units of measure, or SNOMED CT for, you know, a non-numeric qualitative result. Cool. So we want flowing from the lab into the EHR a stream of lab results that are so coded, in particular have a LOINC code for the lab. Great. All this information comes off what's called an LIS, a laboratory information system. That's really the workflow, the EHR analog for the clinical laboratory. It's a workflow tool that helps the clinical lab manage specimens in, the workflow of specimens, you know, how they hit each of the IVDs, collection, collation, and then reporting back out. And, you know, ideally, all triggers off of an order. Not ideally, but you know, triggers off of an order that provides the template and specification for that master workflow. Cool. all this information originates in an IVD where we take a specimen, we plop it into a machine, it does its thing, goes ka-chunk, 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 and spits back out some electronic data. Right now in the current world, the terminology that the IVDs use is different from the internal terminology that the LIS uses, which is different from the LOINC terminology that we want the patient and the clinician to get into their hands. And so the lab maintains a set of basically interface configurations and specifications that map the data that come off of the IVD into the LIS's internal terminology. And then on top of that, the LIS, if they're doing a good job, the lab, if they're doing a good job, is mapping their LIS terminology to LOINC so it can get resulted back. Now, a bunch of hospitals that are small that need to maintain stat labs don't have the expertise to maintain those mappings. And so they give essentially a set of proprietary terminology back. The amount of proprietary terminology is decreasing over time, but there's still a bunch of proprietary terminology. And then, as everybody knows, in the COVID world, we have new device approvals for IVDs. We have new diagnostics. We have new analyte machines that are more efficient, that are better, that go through a 510K approval cycle, yada, yada, yada. So if you're a lab, you're maintaining connections interfaces to a bunch of new analyte machines, to a bunch of new IVDs. And so you got to keep that the maintenance of the list, the mappings from the IVD to the LIS and from the LIS to the result in LOINC currently manually. What this new state of the world is describing is a world where we fix this at source, where the information that flows off of the IVD is already pre-normalized to the appropriate LOINC code, that it flows into the LIS pre-normalized, and those mappings back out to the resulting to the result are pre-normalized. And then, you know, if we really want to dream big, the order itself comes in a standard LOI, and it gets resulted out in a standard LRI. And so we actually have full end-to-end mapping in between the order and the orderable, which again should be a set of LOINC codes and potentially CPT codes into the LIS workflow, flowing data off of the IVDs back into the LIS and then resulting back via LRI to the clinician. And then if it's a reportable lab to public health. So I'm going to pause there. That, you know, that's kind of the current state, is this crazy mapping with lack of standardization, interfaces going wild, and a lot of manual work to the future state that we're trying to get to. So maybe just Ricky, Hans, Greg, anything I've missed in that kind of high level overview of current state and future state. Ricky's endorsing. All right.
If I can, Arian.
Go for it.
The one thing that we've identified is that even with absolutely 100% precision of LOINC mapping, the information there is still not adequate for all the variations of future uses that we want to do. So in order to use real world evidence, that is using patient data generated in the routine clinical care to provide data for regulatory decision making, you have to know the platform from which it was generated. Because you obviously cannot look at the performance of a platform if that information is not even known. And so the fact that LOINC is a many to one mapping kind of precludes that use. And so that's why we are taking an ecosystem approach, because of the fact that we recognize that no single ontology is sufficient to support all the robust interoperable uses that are out there. And so the plan is to have a series of standardized codes that would serve as a fingerprint for the laboratory result, so that as it flows through the healthcare ecosystem, none of that information is lost, and it can be used and adapted for whatever use cases will currently exist or in the future will exist, including AI and machine learning and decision support or what have you.
So we're gonna go to hands. Clem very appropriately raised his hand first and has been waiting patiently. So Clem, you want to go ahead? You're on mute, Clem.
There's a whole lot of things. Firstly, some statements made that the lab tests go to the medical record system. Most lab tests go to the laboratory system first. And that's actually very important. So the Libid thing, which is a great thing, would solve a lot of problems, not all, because it's really just for instruments, not for lots of other kinds of tests. But if they could really push that to get that done, that'd help a whole lot. But the problem is that some medical record systems say you should map to the medical record lab test without the laboratory people being involved, which is a big mistake. That's created some problems. Secondly, some tests are already very standardized. I mean, there are international standards for creatinine and some other tests. So if we have to add a lot of other stuff to it, it's been hard enough to get people to map to just one code. We may never get this done. So just be cautious about making the excellent the enemy of the good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hans?
Just a clarification on the comments that were made. And I thought I heard Aaron indicators that the ideal would be to get it all the way in the device. That actually has been a challenge to do that, because the device to start proper LOINC mapping, they don't have the data to do it. And the question is, can we get that there? You could theoretically argue you can get the information from the LIS order as they provide instructions to the device that they can do it. But realistically, the only place where the mapping can start is the LIS. And then the question becomes, is it realistic to drive that to an automated mapping, or is the context still variable enough, which it's considered today, that somebody needs to do the configuration, as opposed to the mapping guidance is specific enough based on context to know always which LOINC code to use. So I think we still have a problem there, but at least we should have in the LIS no later than that, where the mapping occurs, that so that from that point forward, it can roll all the way through and along with the data to the EHRs, the public health research, whomever. So I think that if the intent is to say, can we already try to get the mapping down into the device to the proper LOINC and SNOMED? Not likely. Should we be able to get it done in the LIS, and what can be done to make that easier? Yes, that's where the focus should be. And the question is, how much automation can you get out of it versus a human needs to interpret it based on the lab's use of those tests?
Yeah. Thank you for that, Hans. I think my statement was that we probably should get the orderables to the LIS in a standard way, so that the LIS can drive the underlying lab workflow in a more automated way, understanding that there's going to be some mapping between the orderable and the actual specification. All right, let's go to Ike.
Thank you. I think the other element we need to remember is that from a public health perspective, there's currently other data that's being provided through the lens, depending upon the particular nature of the test or sample, looking at, you know, whether you're looking at pregnancy status or travel history information that's currently coming across through the LIMS system. And I can't help but wonder if there are other ways of routing data to help avoid having to have the LIMS systems be continuously modified to support these extra fields that aren't really of interest necessarily from a laboratory perspective, other than passing it off to public health.
Yeah, so thank you for that. And generally the way that information is collected is that on using ask it order entry fields. And you know, there is some work in standardizing ask it order entry as well as reflex ordering. A lot of that work has been encoded in the LOI spec and some of the companion information associated with that. But you know, the fact that we get some clinical information into labs it is often done through ask it order entry questions that are workflow questions that pop up automatically in the order. All right, this has been an awesome masterclass for all of us in terms of state of the art. I would encourage everybody to go back and reread the 2018-2019 recommendations that we made in this area. I think we're going to have to go back and potentially revisit some of them and in the context of SHIELD and LIVID. But I think our response right here is to kind of knowing the state of the art, knowing where we are, put together some recommendations for ONC out of our work related to our ISA task. Clem, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just want to add some other things. I think that one needs to understand sort of the partitioning of the world of lab tests. So we're looking at, CORNET has 9 billion instances of mapping from lab to test from 60 different organizations. And of those, 94% are quantitative. So just be aware that the coding is at a different level and much smaller numbers, but important, that have kind of coded answers. And the other thing is an awful lot of those have the specimen built into the test, somewhere in the order of 80%. And, you know, glucose, serum glucose, and sodium urine, et cetera, et cetera. So we should partition the world to, before we target what we have to do to it a little bit to minimize the work and maximize the achievements.
Thank you.
So in terms of Hans, we'll get to you in just a second, but I do think we have to think quickly about how we're going to turn all of this into specific recommendations. And I think the one thing that you proposed, Arian, is going back to our earlier recommendations from a couple of years ago and basically refreshing those with this new knowledge and insight. And perhaps that's something that you and I and Hung perhaps could work through trying to put this together, or I don't know if we could lean on Ricky to chime in with us as well. But I think putting together a draft, a revision with the latest updates, it seems to me a good first step. And then there may be some additional recommendations that need to be tacked on to that. Does that sound right?
I would heavily endorse that. Our observation at the time was that HHS broadly through FDA, CLIA and CMS, CDC and ONC had all the regulatory levers that it needed to be able to drive broad scale lab interoperability. A lot of this was just lining up those levers in a consistent and sane direction. And then since that time, the SHIELD and LIVID work have done tremendous progress in many of the areas that we called for in that report.
Arian, I think you put in the link to the report up early in the chat. I'm looking for it. Maybe we can repost it back at the bottom. I think I found it. There it is. Sorry. Oh, but I can't copy inside of Zoom. Okay, Clem, your hand is up.
Yeah, it's back to, I'm sorry. the letters haven't been applied. So CLIA has taken no, at least published position about standardizing codes. I think the ONC made a mistake, apologize for my good friends at ONC, when they declared that the lab was already topped out. It wasn't. And there was letters from the National Laboratory System saying that there was the coding wasn't very well done, almost not done at all in hospitals. So taking off that pressure really hurt. I think that we really need to push on getting some levers pushed.
Yes.
And I think that, there's a key point there, and that is what is ONC's position on that, I guess? And I don't know whether anyone on the call is prepared to comment on that.
I guess sometimes you don't want to ask ONC to take a position on a call in areas where you're about to make recommendations to ONC. So, you know, maybe we could ask Dr. Pappas to talk about the view, the policy view towards the goods that we want to get to, rather than ask a question about particular regulatory levers and positions. But Hung has his hand up. So, maybe Greg, if you can just give us, at a broad policy view, the shared policy goals of HHS, at least in the work that you've been doing between FDA and ONC. If you are available and off mute. Otherwise, we'll go to Hung. Cool. We will go to Hung.
So my concern with using the regulatory levers right now is that we've already demonstrated that the laboratories are struggling to do accurate coding. A research article we put out a few years ago demonstrated that we asked the different laboratories what LOINC code they had in their system for common tests such as PT, PTT, INR, and troponin. And what we found is that across the board, there was only about 80% accuracy rate in terms of the correct LOINC coding for the common tests. And what also we found was that for standardized tests such as troponin, standard and high sensitivity troponin, none of the laboratories got that correct. And so it's not that the laboratories aren't trying, but to put additional pressure on them to force them to code things when they've already demonstrated that they are struggling, I think would be a mistake. Because obviously the approach that SHIELD is trying to take is that we need to move that effort upstream to the IVD manufacturers who would be the most knowledgeable about their test kit. That way, the information can be provided to the laboratories pre-curated as much as possible so that they are not put in the position of being set up to fail because of the fact that they just do not have the necessary knowledge or resources to do it accurately.
I guess as a counterpoint to that, you know, the LIS is coding to something. And they're either coding to a proprietary code, which then the EHR is then has to cross map to whatever it understands. So you've got a failable mapping step by the downstream recipient who's the least in touch with what the lab intended by its proprietary code. So, you know, completely agree that our goal is to get this captured correctly, but you never avoid the mapping problem. And the later you do the mapping problem, you know, not doing it in the lab means doing it in the EHR. When you're in the EHR, you're way downstream from the lab workflow. And the likelihood of getting it wrong is even more increased. But let us go to Mark.
Thanks. Sorry, I've been responding to an urgent request and multitasking, so I apologize if this has already come up. But I want to lift up my question about patients' roles and access to all of this and making sure that they have a connection. I'm not sure that that's an ISA issue per se, given my other comment about the difference between the catalog, and but just want to flag that to the extent we are suggesting use cases, we want to make sure that patients have equal access to the lab results, and we want to be identifying standards for them to do that through the FHIR APIs. And I welcome anybody's thoughts on the overall question: how do we make sure that patient access is included?
Thank you for that. So thank again, you. I think if you go back and relook at our 2018, 2019 recommendations, you'll see that basic point that the goal of all, you know, the end good of all of this is to get the result in the patients, the clinicians, and public health. I think we left out clinical trials, but it's an important consumer, you know, research needs in an interoperable and interpretable way. And we do contemplate in the 2018, 2019 report that the end goal should be to make this information available to patients via fire-based APIs, such that it can flow electronically and get into the hands of the patient. So I just encourage you to go back and look at that. And then from your perspective of maybe doing a rev of those recommendations, look to see whether we can sharpen any of those recommendations that we made.
Thank you, will do.
Yep. And Stephen points out helpfully the actual page where we made those recommendations. Twenty eighteen, 2019 seems like such a long time ago.
Indeed. Other comments? A number of folks have been active in the chat. Grace, did you want to speak up?
I'm just going through all the recommendations as much as I can. I think that the document is robust, and I do think everyone reviewing it would bring everybody on the same page. I do think there's a lot about patient access. I appreciate Mark bringing that up. And as I dig into it more and more, I think there's a lot that's outlined to facilitate that as well as access to other stakeholders. And I think there's a great opportunity to have continuity from that document with the rich discussion that was here. So Arian, I do support that recommendation as to what we could do as a task, as a work group.
Fantastic. Well, maybe we can then just again, oh, Hans has his hand up. Go ahead, Hans.
Yeah, just a quick clarifying question. I went to the page on making data available to the patient. I think as part of perhaps this round, number of things have started to be addressed or are in flight with current API rollout. It probably would be helpful to understand, and that's maybe more USCDI where we had the discussion, what data is actually of most interest and can we then make sure that they are included in current transactions, Aaron, as we talked about before in LRI, LOI, you can already get a good idea of what kind of data is being exchanged, what's made available from a CLIA perspective. Otherwise, is that rippling through enough for the intent that's outlined here? So I think that goes back to our conversation in USCDI space on what data is it that then can ripple to the rest.
Yeah. And fortunately, we did make recommendations in this round for USCDI to include at least some of those missing data elements with some obvious omissions like reference ranges and interpretation codes. Cool. Well, what I would propose at this point is that so first of all, just a fantastic panel. Many thanks to Ricky, to Hans for doing dual duty, to Andrew and Greg from ONC, to the broad leadership that we've been doing in the SHIELD, sort of combined SHIELD and Livid space. I think the experience on the ground relative to the pandemic and supporting lab interoperability relative to reportable labs for COVID has shown the value of this work. It's a good time to revisit, I think, our pretty well done recommendations from last time, but actually, you know, putting on a public health and research hat, as well as the sort of clinical and patient hat that we were putting on last time. But as I said, I think this work, we've made a huge amount of progress. And I think we also have a great proof point for why getting lab right matters, both for clinical care, research, patient engagement, but also for public health. So Stephen, what I would suggest before we go to public health, public comment, is let's review the spreadsheet, because we've already had folks making additions to the spreadsheet. And just want to kind of give a PSA for maybe a framework for thinking about how we put together recommendations based on some of the email dialogue that we've been having. So The spreadsheet was posted to the full work group. Mark, Grace, David, I'm leaving somebody out. Christine have already put in really helpful comments into the spreadsheet. We're likely in this round of recommendations to make two kinds of recommendations. One are the sort of deep thought recommendations. So it would be the other, this, thank you for this. So, one is the deep thought recommendations that require deep deliberation and in areas like lab interoperability, hearings, as we've just expressed. And those are going to be the ones that we've prioritized. We've up-prioritized in our prioritization framework. We are likely to be able to make a number of other recommendations that are of the form, we recommend that the ISA track use case X and track standards Y and Z, aligning with, fire accelerator project Z or Q or whatever. So, David's done a really amazing amount of work. Grace and Mark have done work here on the HIPAA right to correction and just pointing those use cases at the appropriate fire accelerator. And so we're likely to be able to make recommendations that the ISA track use case for HIPAA right to correction, and then point that use case to the fire accelerator work as well as to the draft standards. Don't just because a use case or an area has been down prioritized by the work group, please do not take that as a belief that we're not going to make recommendations in that area. And I would encourage you to go into the spreadsheet, find areas where the ISA is not tracking a use case or not tracking a known standard, and put that information in there. And then, Christine has made some really good recommendations for the ISA process itself and better ties between the ISA and USCDI. So again, if you have thoughts about the overall ISA process, please use the spreadsheet. This is gonna be, just as we did last time, the way that we turn work group comments into finalized recommendations. Hans, you have your hand up again.
Clarification on the recommendations. Is the intent to focus on what updates to be made to the ISA, which is more of that catalog environment to make sure it's most current, up to date? The comments that relate to how and what kind of levers to use, be it certification, other programs, otherwise, to further enhance uniform adoption of common tools. Are you looking for that in these columns as well, even though it's quite ISA?
Yes. So the distinction I was making between we can make recommendations that are really sort of in line with the charge that we have. We can make recommendations, the ISA track, foo and bar, we should. There are going to be areas where we go deep on a topic, like we're just going deep on the order to IVD, to LIS, to result, to EHR, to public health, to patient loop. And there, we may color outside the lines and start making recommendations, not just on what gets tracked in the ISA, but how to accelerate use of the standards that are named in the ISA. So that's the distinction I'm making between going deep in an area, doing deep thought versus making recommendations that we track things. We can only do that work for a limited number of things, which is why the prioritization framework is useful. Mark.
I'll just add, my sense is that by framing use cases, how you can connect some of the dots in ways that might not yet be in ISA, that can be a helpful way forward too. And exactly. I think we'll see some of that on the SDOH stuff from Gravity Project.
Right. It's even permissible to say, we think the ISA should have a use case for blah, even when no standard exists, just to make sure that we're actually tracking that as a priority use case. Cool. All right. And then with that, Stephen, I think we probably should go to see if we can do some early public comment.
Thank you, Marianne. I think we invited a number of people to join us today, some of whom have tremendous deep expertise in this area, in really trying to do this work within their systems or their applications. So I think giving people a chance to raise their hands now, if they like, and encouraging as well. Let me say, we do encourage members of the public to raise their hands, and we can see whether your hand is raised. So we will call on you in order if you have something to share.
All right, we're going to open up our meeting for public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you happen to be on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. We will pause to see if someone raises their hand. And Adam Davis, you have 3 minutes. You might be on mute.
Thank you. This is Adam Davis from Sutter Health. I'm also the co-chair of the Care Everywhere Governing Council for Epic and the co-chair of the Data Usability Workgroup for the Sequoia Project. I wanted to sort of ask our panelists and sort of comment to our panelists. Lab interoperability is incredibly important to clinicians, as we all know. The final solution of getting all the way that back to the instrument level and having sort of perfection of the mapping is a great goal. And I think there's a real vision for that. And seeing some of that vision laid out today was really inspiring. I do wonder if there's an opportunity for a parallel path for some lower hanging fruits. As Dr. Lane talked about at the beginning of the meeting, there is efforts at some health systems to map certain labs, but the process is quite laborious and has led health systems to abandon the mapping of that for trending and for clinical decision support and quality measures. I wonder if there is a pathway to doing some parallel work to allow already standardized or harmonized labs, such as like sodium or creatinine, to be more easily mapped between health institutions. While we wait for sort of that instrument level thing, because at the end of the day, I think there's a big split between what clinicians care about in terms of those labs and maybe what lab directors do. We, at the clinicians level, I actually don't really care even what the reference range for that sodium is, because I know that I have a general idea that a 140 is a 140 is a 140. I know that's not true for all labs, but I wonder if for some of the labs we could work towards that while waiting for this more permanent solution. Thank you.
Yeah, so this is Ricky. As one of the things SHIELD is working on is prioritizing which labs to identify. And we do know that there's a list of harmonized tests, harmonized to an international standard. And those are definitely on the docket to be included. And there is part of SHIELD kind of as a, parking lot / next step is to look at the harmonization aspect of other lab tests that are, not yet harmonized to an international standard. And so that is something that comes up on our calls regularly and is definitely on top of mind as well. But
Ricky,
that requires different expertise than the data side of things. So
Ricky, I think that the key that Dr. Davis is raising is, can we make a plan that produces an early result for those harmonized labs that could be put into practice, next year, as opposed to this longer process, which clearly is needed and is on the right track, but will take time.
Sounds like we recommend that ONC work with other federal stakeholders to accelerate interoperability for the class of lab results that account for, there's usually 90-10, there's power law dynamics for the number of lab tests that account for the vast majority of lab results. Let's go to public comment first. Hung has his hand up.
Actually, I think Tom Cantalina had his hand up first.
Just in terms of process, I want to make sure that we hear from the public first rather than members of the work group. Is there any more public comment?
I don't see any public hands up.
All right.
Not any other comments.
Whatever order you want. I'm patient.
Okay. I think we've got Tom or Colonel Ford, whoever it is that's behind that hand that was up. Hung's hand was up, and then Clem.
Hey, everyone. This is Colonel Ford stepping in for Colonel Kalina. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. So I was trying to figure out a great way to ask this question because it's not directly correlated to what was presented today. It's more of a selfish question. I'm a dentist by trade, and I was wondering what everyone on the call thought about the dental community. And I know that opens up a whole can of worms, right? And I don't mean to do that. I just want to know what the thought process is between the dental community at large and interoperability, even with labs like that was discussed today. I know we could easily go to an EHR type model with our technologies and local clinics and even large corporate clinics, if you will, not to mention the DOD and the VA complex. What are the thoughts out on the call for dental and interoperability standards and merging that into the healthcare delivery model that we're reaching for? Over.
Yeah, Jeff, this is Stephen Lane, and I'll just say that, you know, this has come up a couple of times within the ONC context. I mean, it's the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, and we all have mouths, right? And most of us have teeth. And I think dental health is clearly a part of health. And there has been a broad, you know, gap between the dental information and the other medical information that's out there. But I don't think it's at all unreasonable to consider dental related use cases as we move forward. I'm not sure, I mean, you tell us how much that relates specifically to this question about lab results, but I'm sure dentists order some labs. I've never had a blood draw at the request of a dentist, but I'm sure some people do. You tell us where that would fit in.
No, great. I really do appreciate that. And I champion this cause, like you said, it's healthcare delivery. And my boss, Colonel Tom Kindlin, obviously says the exact same thing, right? There's not many mouths running around without the body attached to them. And we all can agree to that. It's that healthcare delivery model. Having said that, on calls like this, it's safe to say that most of us here probably get the lighter side of dental care on the most part, right? Healthy, routine care, routine examinations, x-rays, that kind of scenario. We definitely delve into the realms of dental specialties beyond that, right? Periodontal disease, craniofacial anomalies. A lot of general dentists do IV sedations in-house. So we've heard the use cases of that before too, checking on, you know, pregnancy statuses that way versus a urinalysis stick test, you know, those kind of things. And again, with the COVID presence on us like never before, I mean, you can blend that in. Again, I didn't want to, you know, load the question too much here. I just wanted to get that entertained thought out there of dental and that healthcare delivery model. We've been separate for so long and equal. I'm just trying to close that gap as much as humanly possible, especially in the standards conversations like this with the ONC. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, sir. Hung, you had your hand up briefly. Did you have something more you wanted to add?
Yes, in terms of the harmonization, I do think that there are effective measures we can take. One of the proposals for SHIELD is to have a harmonization indicator as a discrete data element that would automatically let the downstream players know that the test in question has already been harmonized at the vendor level, so that it can be safely viewed as interoperable or equivalent to any other same test. But I think that in terms of a short-term future solution might be that I don't think that the public or the healthcare players in general know of the harmonization efforts and what laboratory results are already harmonized. And so I think there could be an opportunity there to raise the profile of these harmonization efforts and let people know work has already been performed and what laboratory values can be safely trended already. And so that could be a short-term solution while we work on everything else, including the harmonization indicator, is to highlight that work and let the people know what list of tests are safely trended right now.
Clem?
Yeah, so I wanted to comment on a couple of things. Firstly, dental, all the standards that exist in FHIR are perfectly fit for dental delivery of dental information. In fact, and there's probably 1,000 dental codes and LOINC too. So it's just a matter of the dental side embracing it and adding, if they need more stuff, asking for it. So I think they're welcome. It fits, the stuff will work. But I wanted to go back to the livid because I think there's a huge opportunity there if we can get the, you know, the upstream business is high. Now, the thing that people may not realize, there's a whole spectrum of differences among instruments. Some are totally stupid and they just get fed a piece of tissue or analyst or fluid and they spit out a number. Some of them actually are little lab systems. They take in an order and they can very well map link to a given test. I think the evolution is toward the more sophisticated ones. So the reason why, as Hans was saying, you got to have a lot more data to figure out what this specimen is going in. You know, is it urine? Is it pee? Is it water? Before you can tie it to a clinically meaningful code. But a lot of the newer instruments do that. So again, push on it. We can get a lot done if we get this, but we're going to have to push because people don't do extra work spontaneously.
And with that, I think we're at time.
How about that? Thank you, everyone, for your time and attention today. We're actually slightly over time. We will be meeting again next week. Arian, do we know what we're focusing on next week yet, or is it going to be?
We're lining up for Gravity next week.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Which I anticipate may again take the whole time, and then we may have a couple of more hearings planned for the next couple of weeks, and then we will also come back together and start focusing in on what people have put into our spreadsheet and recommendations.
Meanwhile, populate that spreadsheet.
Thank you all. Have a wonderful day.
Great. Thank you. Bye.